What's going on, people? Welcome back to the Baby Fathers Podcast for a brand new episode. I'm your host, and I go by name of DJ Riddler. First things first, before we start today's episode, make sure you like, subscribe, and share, and press that notification button so any new episode what comes out, you're going to be the first to know. All right? So on today's show, we have a new special guest. He goes by name of Ziggy. How you doing, my bro?
Yes, I'm all good. Thanks for inviting me down, Dwayne. Appreciate it. Looking forward to having a good chat, and I appreciate all the work you do with fathers and kind of getting their voice out there and getting it heard. So, yeah, man.
Respect for that, my bro. Respect for that. All right. So what I want to do, just kind of let people know what exactly what kind of things you do before we actually get into the conversation.
I've been teaching for 15 years now. I know I don't look it. I've been in education for, 15 years and run my own education company, More Education, for the last five. So
obviously, I've had fathers come on here.
Yeah, man.
So when a mum is stopping a father from seeing a child and having access for them to go and collect them from school, have anything to do with them being in school, what's the impact that does it have on that child?
Okay. Can I break that question down a bit?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to put going, picking up from school, collecting and so on and so forth. And I'm going to talk about academic attainment.
Cool.
Yep. So firstly, a father's input in a child's kind of academic life. Studies have shown if a father has input, especially from 0 to 7, has a greater impact than when mothers do.
Yeah.
And that sounds quite controversial, but studies have shown that. So children are first tested at the end of kind of key stage one, so at 7. A child whose father's almost kind of led on academia, reading, so on and so forth, tend to have higher test scores in literacy and numeracy than those who don't. So father's input in a child's education is essential for high academic attainment. Studies have shown this continually over and over again. And even if you break it down, because I know some people are saying, if I don't live with my child to if I do live with my child, there is a significant difference between, let's say you don't live with your child, and you don't have anything to do with your child. If you don't have anything to do with your child, whereas if you don't live with your child, but you put all of the effort in, there's a massive difference.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I was studying Dwayne. Here's even a deeper fact. Let's say you've got a child whose father passed away.
Okay.
Yep. And then you've got a child who has no contact with their father. A child whose father has passed away has higher academic attainment than a child who has nothing to do with their father. And the study showed it's because in the home, the father is still spoken about with kind of reverence and respect. So even through kind of how you speak about a father, so let's say the father died and the mum will still speak about kindness and warmth and so on and so forth. That impacts the child.
Yeah.
So a child will still want to kind of almost revere, show respect and do well at school because they know they came from a home
where
their father was loved and so on. Whereas if you've got a child who has no contact with their dad, and even worse, the dad's spoken about negatively in the house.
Yeah, I shouldn't laugh, but I know. Yeah.
The lowest form of academic attainment, because, the studies speak for themselves. So it's, I can't insist when I'm speaking directly to fathers. I cannot insist how important it is that you play an active role in your child's education. So I'm going to come back to you. Spoke about
collecting.
The reason why it's so fundamentally important that not just collecting, but as a father, you are physically present at your child's school.
Okay, just stop you there. We're going to touch that. So we're talking about school plays. We're talking about parents' evening.
I'm going to break it down,
cool.
Dwayne.
Cool.
That's why.
Cool.
That's why I was. Okay. There are levels. Okay. There are levels. I'm going to break it down.
Fire.
Yeah? Firstly, as I said, school are run by human beings, people. Yeah. And if a school or individuals are aware that a father is there, there's less likely for certain things to happen because they know with a man being there, there are possible repercussions. Let me break it down. If anything happens, my son's sitting right here. If anything happens, they know I'm going to come down. I'm not going to shout and I'm not going to argue. There's possibly going to be a serious confrontation. If, let's say, for example, if my daughter, God forbid, was child Q, and she'd come home and told me that, that's a life and death situation. And unfortunately, a lot of times when I see in my own experiences, parents come down or have issues with school or things have happened to children, it's usually the mums who are there on their own. On their own, backing it. And it almost kind of comes down, reminds me of the Stephen Lawrence situation, God rest his soul. We always saw Doreen and Neville Lawrence together, even though at one point they weren't together. They're not together now. But they presented a united front. They presented a united front no matter what. That father being there is an element of protection for your child. You don't know who's in that school. You don't know who's watching your youth. You don't know what ill intentions. I've heard, I've been in staff rooms and heard some teachers say some horrible things about children. Some not nice things about children. So even that physical presence, turning up, being there. The next level is parents' evenings. So let's say, for example, things are so fractured between yourself and your children's mum that you can't even turn up to a parents' evening together. If you have what you call PR, parental responsibility, so that means you've turned up on the day of the birth certificate and you've got your name on the birth certificate, you automatically have parental responsibility. That means you're entitled to educational decisions. You can call the school and say, listen, I'm Johnny's dad, you with me. I can provide you with evidence. I have parental responsibility. I need to be firstly updated on the register. My name needs to be put second. And I would like to receive updates, be it school reports or so on and so forth. They can be sent separately. Here's my address. If a parent's evening comes out, you can say, you can pop an email, say, listen, I'm not going to be able to go to Johnny's parent's evening. However, would you be able to send me a report? So when you see little Johnny again, you can say, Johnny, listen, I wasn't able to go to your parents' evening, but look,
I got
the report. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 What that is expectations and aspirations. You didn't do X in maths. You didn't do, what are we going to do to put something in place? A level above that now, and it's something I recommend, especially for men, is to become a school governor.
Okay, and how do you go about doing that?
You can contact the school. You can go on your local authority website in regards to becoming a parent governor. There are only 3 meetings a year. The meetings are like 2 hours. It's not murderous. However, we all know, and I'm sure male, female, if your dad was at certain events, you felt your chest was big. So I've been a parent governor for my children's primary school, and in that I had to hand out certain awards at the school play and so on and so forth. And I remember my daughter's chest was big because daddy was a governor. Whether I was speaking to mum or not, how's mum going to stop me from being a parent governor? I've applied to the school. So these are some of the key things that I would recommend to any father if you're having issues. Make sure, one, make sure you are on the register, you prove PR, and you receive updates about a child's academic attainment.
So you mentioned something about you as a teacher for 15 years. So was it working in a normal school?
Yeah, I worked in mainstream school like a normal teacher, qualified, did my degree, did what you call a PGCE, qualified as a teacher. I was in mainstream school for about a good 8-9 years. So the mantra at the time was, we need more kind of black male teachers, black male role models for our children, for our boys. And I kind of jumped on that bandwagon. And it's not to say it's not needed. It definitely was needed. However, after a while, I kind of saw that, you know something, like, we're not a plaster. You with me? It was almost like, let's get these black men into teaching to plaster over the cracks of something that is a lot deeper than just simply a crack. It's like a massive chasm. So that's kind of what led me out of mainstream teaching to start my own tuition company, More Education, to really kind of focus on ensuring that our children have the support system to get the best grades possible. Right.
So when you was in a mainstream school, did you feel that the kids was not achieving the grades that they needed to be?
No, they weren't. Like, let's be honest, and statistics will show you, if you look at the statistics and ethnic breakdown, I think there's like 20 years worth of data.
Okay.
Black children have always fallen below the national average. So national average on year to year is about 50%. So 50% of children in the UK will achieve 5 A to Cs, including maths and English. Yeah, okay. Black children fall below that. So 42, 40, it changes year to year.
Yeah.
Yep. And I saw that. And I saw that wasn't necessary, because we had some... The most painful thing is when you go to results day. Remember results
day? Ramadan. Yeah.
Results day. Yeah. GCSE. And you see the kids in the corner who know they could have got the grades if they had the right support system, if they had the right people, kind of the right aspirations. They could have got higher grades. And I was like, you know what? I'm tired of coming here and seeing kind of the system fail our children. I know what it takes.
So what kind of things were failing? What kind of things were failing the kids? Like, when you talk about system, what are we talking about here?
If I'm gonna be honest, and I'm gonna kind of pinpoint one key thing, would be aspirations.
Okay.
So low aspirations of institutions, of teachers, of schools. Those have great impacts on our children. So if you, I think in sociology they've got something called self-fulfilling prophecy.
Cool.
If you naturally assume that somebody's gonna do badly, guess what's gonna happen?
They're gonna do badly.
So if we framed children, be it black and mixed race children, as being like they're not as smart, or they're not as good, or they're naughty, or so, a lot of these tropes that have been going on for years. And the reality is, a school is full of people, humans, and they're gonna have these prejudices and these ideas, and a lot of them permeate in education to this day.
So when you're talking about low expectations, so are they failing the kids in academically? Are they kicking kids out of school? Like, you've named it.
So low expectations in regards to academics, what they assume they're going to get, the tolerance. So as you said, kicking kids out, exclusion rates. I'm sure you know black children are more likely to be excluded from school. So black boys are 4 times more likely to be excluded from school. Black girls twice as likely to be excluded from school. The types of situations black children find themselves in. So I'm not sure if you heard, it was a few months ago, there was an issue of Child Q where they called the police on a 14, 15-year-old girl because she smelled of... A few months before that in the news, there was a private school where they found drugs and all those kind of things, like in Oxfordshire, I think it was a white private school, predominantly white private school, where there were drugs and parties and all kind of craziness. The police aren't going up there.
Yeah.
You with me?
Yeah.
So the over-policing and the environment that a lot of black children kind of find themselves in this system, kind of often breeds failure.
Okay.
It's an environment that for many, many children isn't fantastically positive, and that's where you see the results. Not all schools, but we've heard time and time again, we've seen time and time again, news story after news story, results after results about the environments and the results that black children achieve and the experiences they have.
So okay, cool. So is there data to this?
Yeah, of
course. To prove
data.
This?
Yeah, of course there's data.
What's the data to it?
All right, so if we look at the pass rates of black children, at GCSE, they've never crept above national average. So you're trying to tell me you have a group of children who, for whatever reason, are unable to achieve at national average. And I think the best statistic that shows this is anonymized testing.
Okay.
So when teachers test children, or so you write it and I'm marking it as your teacher.
Okay.
And I know Dwayne, I know what you look like and I know who you are. I'll give you this grade. However, if I don't know who it is and I have no idea who's I'm marking, black children are marked higher. So when black children are tested and marked and they don't know who it is, their grades go up. Okay. However, when teachers mark and they know who you are, the grades go down. That is a study that anybody, if you go on my Instagram, you can see it. So that tells you that oftentimes Black children are prejudiced by their teachers in regards to marking and expectations. Dwayne, I'm gonna tell you something straight. You asked for evidence, and I can show you evidence. Where the most powerful evidence is literally what you've just said here, and a lot of quote unquote the man them who you talk to, when you begin to speak about their school experience, what they encountered at school, something called microaggressions from teachers. That's all the evidence we need, because when we get into a room and we really begin to break down what happened to us at school, it was a traumatic experience and nothing's greatly changed, because it sounds weird and it sounds strange. Most of the time I spend most of my time with children.
Of course.
So I hear the stories. I know the stories. I know what's happening. So this isn't anything new. And this is why I kind of began to slowly creep out of the system, because although being a teacher in the system, I was realizing this ain't...
Well, listen, this ain't the one. You talk about being a teacher. I was a teacher once upon a time myself.
Yes.
But I worked in a Prue.
Yes.
So I worked where the kids actually got kicked out of school.
No, I've done work in Prue.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, but when I first started in here, it was a lot of Asian kids in it.
Okay.
Right. And then from the Asian kids, you started seeing the dynamics started changing. You started seeing more Black kids started coming in. To actually, the place was just full up of Black kids. Mm-hmm. And one of them was, asked one of the students, why did you get kicked out of mainstream school for? And he told me, he said to me, the reason why he got kicked out for is because I think he stole a pound. But by him stealing a pound, he got kicked out of school, excluded from school permanently, and it wasn't allowed to go back into school.
Dwayne, can I just stop you there? Only 1% of children who are kicked out of school achieve those 5 GCSEs, including English and maths. Yeah, so only 1% of children who are kicked out of school achieve those 5 GCSEs, including English and maths. So if you are kicked out of school, if you're permanently excluded, your life chances are destroyed, basically. And the biggest reason why children are kicked out of school, it's for low-level disruption. So you walk in, and anybody can relate to this. You walk into a school, so it's like three strikes. You walk into class, and you start going like, "Raw, where's my pen? Where's my... Dwayne, can you be quiet, please? Oh, sorry, miss, I was just looking for my pen. Hey, Ziggy, have you got a pen? Let me borrow your pen." That I've already spoken to you already, so on and so forth. "Yeah, okay, right, I've got a pen." Blood, you're on 2 strikes already, you know?
Yeah.
You do the... And you've got 50 minutes, yeah, not to make... If the teacher already has certain ideas about you, preconceptions about you, good luck you trying to get through a 50-minute lesson. So that might be period one, believe me. You've received the third strike after your pen falling on the floor. You know, your pen falling on the floor, you scrambling to get the pen. Dwayne, I've already told you, can you start? And your runner, that's period one.
Yeah.
So how are you expected to now go through the rest of the day on a positive when you know you're going to get a detention? Most permanent exclusions, and data shows this, are for low level disruption. They're not for things like fights or bringing like a prohibited item into school, drugs, knives, so on and so forth. And even in those instances, I've seen children from different backgrounds where, you know what, you do something called a managed move where they'll kind of slyly move you to a different school and you can get with your GCSEs over there. Most children are kicked out for low level stuff. And when we look at the statistics and we look at the numbers and we look at the outcomes, the academic outcomes of children who grow up in lone single parent homes, homes where the fathers aren't present and so on and so forth, aren't as good as those who come from kind of married homes.
Yeah.
So, and again, I place myself in that, and I've done a ridiculous amount of hard work to ensure that my children are have good educational outcomes. It helps that I've been in education, but it's almost like sometimes the fact is we're sometimes setting our children up for failure, or we're making it harder than it has to be. Listen, I've seen some fantastic success stories. I know single parents, specifically mothers, who have raised doctors. There's a young lady who lives around the corner from me.
Yeah.
Lawyers. You've got great success stories. Don't get me wrong. But statistically, what's more likely to work and have the best outcomes is all the data shows two-parent home, where you can receive the most input. So it's something we need to look at.
Cool. So I want to talk about, obviously, you've been a teacher for 15 years.
Yeah.
You saw that in the school system, it wasn't really for you in the terms of, you seen that it was failing the young black students.
Many of our students, yeah.
Right. So you decided to start up your own thing. Tell me about that.
Okay. So, interesting enough, it started with a student who came to me and she was crying. She was like, tomorrow I'm going to fail English. Her English teacher, in essence, didn't believe in her. And I think she'd received the same thing we were speaking about. She'd received a grade back.
Yeah.
She thought she was going to get an A. She put a load of effort into it. She didn't. That teacher didn't believe in her. And she asked me to tutor. I was tutoring some other students at the time. And I was like, this isn't making sense.
Yeah.
All right, let me do my own thing. Started off with 4 students. Last year we had 50 plus.
Wow.
So we specialize in English and maths. The reason why we specialize in English and maths at More Education is simply because moving on in life, those are the two core top subjects that you're going to need. So you know any job, any role you're going to go into.
That's what you're going to need.
Let's look at your English and maths. We've been able to achieve a 90% pass rate at year 11 GCSE English and maths for our students over a extended period of time, 5 years.
So how many teachers are involved in doing this? What you've got going on?
Oh, gosh. Good question. That's a good question. We've got, we've got between 8 and 10 teachers.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, half of our teachers come from Jamaica. I've recruited quite a few of our teachers from Jamaica. And coming back to a point I made earlier, one of the reasons we've done that is expectations.
Okay.
My parents are Jamaican. I went and spent a lot of time in Jamaica. I realized the teachers, they have different expectations of the children.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of cultural connection and expectations we've seen have made a huge difference, because the children are coming in, seeing somebody who looks like them, who has high expectations. For a lot of our children, especially those outside of London, they've never had a teacher who looks like them teach them before.
Yeah.
Ever.
And do you think that's like a big problem in terms of someone you can relate to? Because I know that there's some teachers do look like us, but they sell out to our kids.
Yes, that is true. However, I've worked with professionals from lots of different races who are fantastic teachers who are. However, as I said earlier, predominantly you tend to kind of have expectations or ideas about our children, and that's why our children are stigmatized in education. When you have, and we have a very kind of thorough selection process of our teachers. When you have teachers who are invested in their children, that's step one, that's a big thing. And when you have teachers who look like you, oh my gosh, the impact. I'll give an example. We've got students in Cumbria. If you had to make me point on a map now, I wouldn't even know where it is. We've got children in Cornwall. They've never had a teacher who looks like them, who understands their culture, and they can even learn their culture from. It has an impact on your education when you are living in a country in which you are significantly the minority. So it does have an impact.
So let's talk about this black culture, like what they teach in history.
Okay.
Why is it only a tiny bit what's going on gets taught?
Listen, that can be taken. We could be here all day on that one. I'm going to be honest with you. My personal take on it, if I'm going to be 100% honest, is I'm always for self. So that's why we started More Education. We could, don't get me wrong, and I respect those who kind of fight for those kind of things, but I ain't really going to fight the system. I'm on, let's create our own thing.
100.
I've created something with the help of all of my amazing teachers and all of my amazing staff that gets results.
Yeah,
I ain't worrying about what they're doing in schools. My thing that I struggle with is our children from home don't even know their own stuff.
Yeah.
So how can we expect, why do we expect them to be taught that stuff in schools?
Yeah.
As I said, I was taught in multicultural boroughs where I've taught with Turkish children, Somali children. They might have taught me about their history.
Yeah.
You talk to the average Kurdish kid. You talk to the average Somali kid. Even recently, the whole thing about Mo Farah came out, and he's telling you he's from Somaliland. He ain't from Somalia. There's a difference.
Yeah.
You talk to the average white Irish kid, you talk to all, they know about their history and their culture. That's not taught in schools.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's true.
It's not taught in schools. However, you ask the average black youth, and a lot of time they tell you about American history. Yeah, like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. And that man ain't got nothing to do. Like, don't get me wrong, the civil rights is important, but that doesn't directly affect me.
Yeah.
Man, I can't tell you about the Bristol bus boycott. You with me? That man, I can't tell you about Claudia Jones and the start of Notting Hill Carnival.
Yeah.
Man, I can't tell you. That man will love Gold Carnival, but they can't tell you
the history behind it.
The history behind it. You with me? So why are we not teaching our children these things and the significance of I'm thinking about the riots in Toxteth and the riots in Brixton, the political movements behind that.
Yeah.
So I don't think that we should really be pressuring schools in that way. I think we should be doing it in-house.
Cool.
Because once we're doing it in-house, then you can go outside and say, listen, the kids will naturally pressure, say, the kids will be in class and say, nah, miss, sorry, it don't go like that.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
To where we're challenging in a positive way, and we can inform the teachers and our students can inform the teachers, sorry, miss, that part of history.
Yeah.
Here's the evidence.
Yeah, no, I got you.
That's what I'd love to see, personally. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, anybody who's pushing for that stuff in schools, power to you. I just don't. I think we should be teaching our own stuff.
So when you're talking about your thing going on, is it open Monday to Friday, or is it a weekend?
No, we do after school. We do most of our stuff after school, more education. So we're 5:30 to 7:30 most days.
Yeah.
It's 4 hours a week. It's intense. So our aim.
So is it government funded, or is it private funded?
Private funded.
Okay.
Private funded, we make it affordable. We, in essence, you give us our kids, we get you give us the children, they attend 100%, they do the homework, we get the results. It's that simple.
Yeah. And the data on that?
As I said, we have a 90% pass rate at GCSE A to C, usually within 18 weeks. So if you give us your child for 18 weeks, we're able to move them up one level. In both English and maths. So all we require is 100% attendance, hand in the homework, respond to feedback. If your child does all three of those things, I guarantee you will move up, your child will move up a grade in English and maths. If you don't, I'll give your money back.
Wow. And even going on to that, where is it based?
Online.
So it's online stuff?
It's online. We've got children in Birmingham, we've got children in Manchester, we've got children in Liverpool, Sheffield, and that's one of the reasons why it's online.
Yeah.
So originally we were in a community centre in Edmonton, and then after the pandemic, we went online, innit?
Well, it made the business plan change.
Fast.
Yeah.
Quickly. But because people want us to kind of, because that's the community centre is kind of what we're used to. Because we've got children all over the country who are benefiting from this, I wouldn't go back into a community centre because I wouldn't want to abandon my children in Sheffield who, again, who've never.
Yeah.
They don't see black people like this.
So how many people come online at once you don't teach?
Altogether, our last count, term ended, we were about 55. We've increased capacity. We can go up to about 100 for next year. So we've got the space to accommodate children. We have a 24-hour support system, so if you send a message, it pings up on my phone.
Okay.
If I can't answer it, I'll speak to one of my teachers. Listen,
yeah,
and it helps that some of them are in Jamaica, so you might send them, might listen, Johnny needs help with maths, please respond to him. That's how much I'm on it, because
it like a one-to-one they get?
No, it's small groups. In small groups. They come on online, they operate in small groups. 4 hours a week, so 2 hours English, 2 hours maths. You're set homework, the homework's responded to, it's updated, so on and so forth. The key is about consistency.
Yeah,
that's the key. The key is consistency. It takes some children a little while because it is quite intense. But once they get into that consistency, so for example, we've had students who've been able to do their GCSEs a year early and get top grades.
So I think time is up. I want to big up to everyone who's been watching today's episode. I want to hear your lot's views on today's show. I want to hear you see, drop it in the comments below. Ziggy, before we go, is there anything else you want to say?
The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to do, my son's here going like, Instagram, more education, 01. You can check us out, our website, www.more, that's two O's, M-O-O-R-E, education.co.uk. And I think for the platform, I just kind of wanted to say to fathers, I know it can be, it can be extremely difficult. It can be a real, it can be emotionally taxing, it can be very difficult, but you make a massive difference on your child's education attainment, and education changes lives. So if there's anything you want to focus on, sometimes as fathers, we've got to sacrifice a lot. Nobody talks about it. You got to sacrifice your ego, but making sure you're in your child's life and supporting them in regards to education makes a massive, massive difference.
Go you, man. Go you. So listen, I definitely agree to what you're saying. We're going to go. It's been a different kind of conversation today, but that's what we do in the Baby Fathers. We try and bring you different things, you know? So make sure you like, subscribe and share and press the notification button, all right? So till next time from the Baby Fathers, we out.